Welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. I'm Teresa, and I'm joined by
Kate.
And today, we watched episode one of the Pride and Prejudice miniseries, which I think is 1995.
It is.
Hooray!
Colin Firth.
For those who have been following along with us, we have started Northanger Abbey, but we're interspersing some Pride and Prejudice content still in there. So we'll be watching the mini series kind of episode by episode and interspersing those into our Northanger Abbey content as well.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about the mini series because this is finally the one with Colin Firth. And I definitely thought the movie was the one with Colin Firth. At least now I feel like I'm in the right movie. Although, still in my brain, Colin Firth and Keira Knightley are the Pride and Prejudice matching, which is not true. But that's where my brain goes.
I mean, isn't there like a 20-year age difference between those two?
Probably. But Colin Firth reprises Mr. Darcy like many, many times in many, many roles.
Yeah, but I feel like his pairing is usually age appropriate.
Yes, this is true. I don't know. I guess, well, 10 years later, the movie came out.
Yes.
So probably like a weird 10-year age gap, which is weird. But for Hollywood, they do that all the time. And it's weird.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's just where my brain goes.
Did you know, which you probably didn't know, Colin Firth and Jennifer Ely were dating while they made this? I think they were dating while they made this, but they dated for a couple of years.
Were they dating before they made this or did they meet on set?
I would have to read Wikipedia again. I just know by the time that they got to the premiere for this, they were together.
Cool. We love love.
Right? I mean, they didn't stay together, but...
Well, we love love when it happens and when it's done. So be it. That's okay too.
Yeah. So should we just dive right in and you can tell me all of your wonderful thoughts about Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy?
Sure, we can dive right in. And I did take notes on this one again, like I did when we watched the movie. So we can kind of go through my notes. These are a little bit more chronological, I feel like, than when we watched the movie, because I was doing a little bit more character by character base. But this one's a little bit more chronological. And I think a product of that is because it's a mini series and it's broken up into six parts. I didn't necessarily feel like I had to cram it all in. And I feel like this format doesn't make you cram it all in really quickly and tightly.
Okay, that's fair. There's more space to tell the story. What did you think of the beginning of this one where the sweeping music and some men riding in on horses?
Well, I liked the soundtrack off the bat. I was like, oh, good music choices. So I enjoyed that. And so the very first scene you see Bingley, he is so puppy. Like so much puppy energy right off the bat. I had no question of who is this man. I was like, oh, that's Bingley. Like, I already know he fits to a T. But then I was also kind of like, this is a weird scene. Why are they randomly riding horses to be like, I think I'm going to rent that house. Hooray. And then riding off. I don't know if that's how this would have happened.
That's how the decision making process worked.
It just seemed a little strange and out of place. And I don't know what it furthered for the story other than you now know that they're coming.
You want to know what I think this furthers for the story? We get to see that in the decision-making process about buying the house, Bingley relied on Darcy's opinion and approval.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice, subtle way to set up that dynamic and deepen that. And also just tell us, look, two hotties coming to town.
Right. And Lizzie sees them. So she knows, but she doesn't know.
She just saw two guys riding horses.
Yeah, it was just an interesting scene. And I felt like there was a little bit of the 2005 version because it starts off with Lizzie walking. And then to see this one and be like, oh, they kind of shot for shot repeated that to tie it in.
Well, Lizzie likes walking.
Well, yeah, of course Lizzie likes walking.
Yeah, because it's the Regency era. Other than reading and walking, what are you supposed to do for fun?
Nothing. She's got nothing else to do for fun.
Yeah, especially when you don't have enough money to keep horses and things like that.
Although they do have horses.
But those are not riding horses. They're working horses.
Well, then what's the horse that Jane rides?
yes, they have horses that can be ridden, but they're, for the most part, from my understanding of things, the Bennett sisters don't have horses specifically for riding. They may know how to ride, but they just have learned the basics and that those are working horses.
That makes sense. I get that. And we're very quickly introduced to the whole Bennett family. And I hate Kitty and Lydia. They're so annoying in this.
Do you think that they felt like 15-year-old and a 17-year-old?
No, I think they feel younger. I think they feel more like maybe a 15 and a 13-year-old.
Okay.
Just a little bit younger. I wrote in here, Lydia in particular feels extra silly, extra dramatic.
Like she's ridiculous.
Yeah, she's a little ridiculous. And Mr. Bennett points it out several times. Oh my God, my daughters are so stupid. These are really stupid children. And it's really mean, but I don't think he was entirely wrong. In this adaptation, they're really, really silly and naive.
So you feel like they took the Lydia and Kitty from the book and they dialed up the annoying.
I think everyone they've dialed up in this, actually. I also think Mrs. Bennett is even more dramatic than she actually is. I think they took everyone and were like, we're just going to make them a 10. And I feel like the movie did that for Darcy a little bit of like, we're going to make Darcy a 10 in awkward. This is just like, we're just going to make everyone's worst traits a 10.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. It's very hard to have empathy for this Mrs. Bennett.
Yeah.
She's not expressing these things in ways that you're like, I can see your side. It's like, you're really annoying.
There were so many times where I was like, just stop talking. Because I think that that did come up in the book a little bit. You get that feeling of she oversteps a little bit, or Lizzie and Jane have to do a lot of, oh gosh, mom, come on. But not to this extent. I think it's just so overdramatic and so played out. And she just can't stop herself. She just can't be quiet. It's just horrible. So I think they're my three least favorite characters I've met so far.
We'll see how that sticks. I'll ask you who's your least favorite character so far.
I will say, I do think the dynamic between Mr. Bennett and Mrs. Bennett is very true to how it is in the book.
That felt more accurate to you.
You can tell that. I don't even know if they really like each other in this.
Right. Well, they don't in the book, really.
It feels very accurate. And Mr. Bennett's kind of an ass. He says a lot of things that are really mean.
Do you feel like when he was saying mean things, you could tell he was sarcastic?
Here's what I think. The way this character is written and being played, he is the type of person who thinks he's being sarcastic and that it's obvious, but instead he's just being mean and just being an asshole. So in his brain, it might be sarcastic. And I think you're, as the viewer, supposed to know it's being sarcastic, but it's done in such a way that it actually steps beyond sarcastic to just mean.
Well, I think it's that layer of like when someone's being sarcastic and they know the other person isn't getting that they're being sarcastic. That's when sarcasm's not joking and jovial. That's where sarcasm is being a dickhead.
He takes a lot of point at his youngest daughters and at Mrs. Bennett in this first episode. They are the butt of his joke or his sarcasm.
Which, again, accurate to the book.
It's accurate, but also I do think it is a little more dialed up. I didn't like him in the book, but I really don't like this adaptation.
Oh, interesting. Okay. We'll see how that goes on.
Maybe that'll change.
Yeah, I don't know if it will, but I think that's definitely something that we talked about while watching the movie, was that you could understand why people liked Mr. Bennett from watching the movie. And I will keep checking in on your thoughts on Mr. Bennett as we continue the miniseries to see if you think he's less likable than the book.
Okay, yeah, we'll pin that and see if he gets better or worse.
Because I like this Mr. Bennett better.
Than the book or than the movie?
Than the movie. The one in my head from the book is the best, obviously. But I prefer him, but maybe I prefer him because I feel like he's closer to the book. Anyway, we'll see where you feel.
Yeah, so far he's not doing it for me. I don't like him.
Okay.
I'm going to just briefly address Mary because I don't think we need to come back to her really. But again, dialed to 10. Mary is so absurdly pious and very sad. I feel bad for Mary. This adaptation of Mary, rather than her just being like kind of quiet, reserved to herself, feels like she's been brainwashed in some way. Like, I don't know. There's something about her that doesn't click. She doesn't feel real. She feels too sad.
I think there is a piece of this Mary that feels a bit like a caricature.
Yeah.
The way that they've done the glasses and I think a little bit her dress as well. They've made her unattractive, but not.
I don't even think it's an attractiveness, a physical trait, but.
No, it's like she's not really Mary in that Mary is like bizarre and pious, but it seems in the book more oblivious and this seems more intentional, I guess.
Almost like there's a jaded piece to her in this. She's using the piousness as a barrier because she's so jaded. Maybe there's like an angry something under it.
I think if we're talking about like things that they dialed up Mary's depression.
Yeah.
And us as mental health professionals look at that and we go, eh.
Well, because they didn't have to.
Well, they didn't have to. And also poor Mary.
The three lines I wrote about Mary here are, God, Mary is so pious. And then poor Mary. And then she's just sad.
Right. And I feel like she's definitely sad in the movie, too. And there are moments where you feel more bad for her and that her sadness isn't a choice that she's decided to lean into. Anyway,
I do appreciate that they call to the book quite specifically. Of there's a lot of word for word quotations that get carried across. They use that first line of, I always forget what it is, the man wanting good fortune must marry, something like that.
It is a truth universally acknowledged. A man with good fortune must be in want of a wife.
There we go. Yeah, so they use that. There's a couple times where I'm like, oh, I'm clocking that that's a quote from the book directly that they've really carried across, which I feel like the movie didn't do as directly. I think the movie took some things, but not as much.
I think the issue with the movie was that the movie did it and it felt disruptive to the dialogue because it didn't fit. Whereas with this, it fits. You're like, oh, I'm watching Pride and Prejudice. Not like it fits and you're like, oh, it's a quote from the book and that's weird.
It's a good callback to the book and a good connection into the book versus trying to really force it.
It feels natural for the dialogue in this, I think, a little bit more natural at the very least.
I do think so. We get to the scene where Lizzie and Jane are talking and Jane's brushing her hair and they're talking about marriage and all of these things. I just wrote down, it feels like they're really trying to be profound in this moment. And I love Lizzie and Jane. And I really liked that they were building this relationship that felt very sweet in that scene. But I was like, I don't know if I would actually see them actually having this conversation.
I mean, keep in mind that they're 20 and 22. And basically the conversation they have is like, I want to marry for love. If I can. I think we've had this conversation before where it feels like they have some very superficial, profound conversations. But then you also have to remember the layer of what's the most important thing that is going to impact their lives in the biggest way possible because women are seen as property? Marriage.
It's true. So I get that. I guess it just felt like they were trying to like make a really big point about marriage and love and falling in love. I don't know if it needs to be forced in this conversation like that.
I mean, it is an actual conversation that they have. And if I remember correctly, it's not a word for word, but they're taking bits and pieces of different conversations that they've had because very much at the start of things, Lizzie is much more the love while also being practical and Jane's a little people-pleasy.
Well, and maybe that was it, was that because it felt like multiple conversations coming into one, it's that thing that happens when they try and distill down multiple conversations into like, how do we get that into a 30-second scene where you're like, something missed. Like, there's too much here.
Did it feel like it was too profound or too deep of a scene for basically an intro part of a miniseries?
I think so. I think if it had happened maybe towards the end of the episode even, or in a second episode, I probably would have been fine with it. It's just very early on. Just didn't fit for me. I did wonder if the math that Mr. Bennett was doing is actually correct on the page, and I didn't stop it to check because I'm really bad at math anyways. I went into social work for a reason. There's very little math in this world, but I did wonder. I was like, I wonder if that math is actually correct. So if anyone's checked that, let us know.
I'm sure someone has.
I'm sure it is correct, but just my brain went to, how funny would that be if there was a math error?
And I mean, that would also be a commentary on his character. Like, you could get super in depth and they just like dropped a little Easter egg for people who were good at math.
Maybe. Well, someone let us know. And then we get the scene where we're coming into the assembly and they're ushering in Bingley's carriage. And there are two men running in front of this carriage with torches, which just seems like a colossally bad idea. Why do we have men running with torches down the middle of the road?
I don't know. Someone probably knows. Or maybe it's just bad, but it is weird.
I mean, I imagine some of it is it was dark and they were coming to an event at night. But like, why are they running? Everything we know is like, don't run with fire.
Well, I wonder if they were running to grab the horse reins.
No, they were in front of it. They were leading the carriage.
Maybe they were just leading the carriage to where they wanted it to stop.
Don't run with torches, people. This is my PSA for you. Do not run with torches.
Okay, the warning.
And then they get out of the carriage and put on these hats. And all I wrote was, what the fuck are those hats? What the fuck? What the fuck? What are those hats, Kate? Tell me about these hats. I don't understand. And then you don't see them again. They come inside. They're not wearing these weird hats again.
Okay. Is this the one where they have like the long hats?
Yeah, they're like black and like tall. It has like a little floppy, droopy thing. I don't know. It's kind of dark, so you can't really tell them the hats are black, but they're very tall. They're weird hats. Kind of a pirate, but also maybe an elf hat? I don't understand. And like a Pope hat?
Okay, let's see here. Oh, I think I found him. These are fancy hats?
Are they fancy hats or are they just weird hats?
Oh my god! Oh my god! Mr. Hurst in the hat!
Yeah! All three of them are wearing these weird hats!
Yeah, they're weird.
And they're not wearing them when they get inside. And the door is like 5 feet away. Why are you putting on the weird silly hat to walk 5 feet?
I mean, because they would have done coat check.
I understand that, but why put the hat on at all? You look stupid.
Because you don't want poop on your head? I don't know.
Why is there poop falling on their heads?
The bicron is basically a wide brim hat with the front and the rear halves turned up. Was still the correct hat for half and full dress, formal wear, and certain military and naval uniforms. And the assumption more popular with conservative gentlemen. So it's a fancy hat.
Well, I really hope it never comes back into fashion. Those are the worst hats I have ever seen.
We weren't watching in sync because you started before me. I asked you to send me notes and you said the only one so far is, what the fuck are those hats? What the fuck are those hats, Kate? So I was like, I don't know. So I kept watching and I missed the hats.
They were the biggest thing to me in this entire episode were how bad those hats were.
They are historically accurate hats because they're rich guys. That's why they're wearing them. That's what they're signaling.
I get it's a period piece and we want to be historically accurate, but can't we just leave the hats out? I don't think anyone would know. You could still be historically accurate. Just put them in a different hat. Just don't have the hat.
Well, or just cut the scene with the horses and the torchbearers.
Yeah, that too. Don't have people running with torches. Don't have weird hats. I've fixed this entire episode.
Those are the things that were wrong with it. Because if those are the biggest things wrong with the episode, sounds like you enjoyed it.
I did enjoy it, but those things are just weird. There are other things. We'll get to them. Don't worry. But the hats pissed me off.
Yeah, Mr. Hurst in the hat is the best, where he just like comes out from Darcy and he's like, hello.
It's just weird. I did appreciate that once they got inside the assembly, their entrance was much less awkward. There was still the like music stopped and they were greeted and all of that, but it wasn't this like the music stops, they walk across an entire room and then turn around and everyone just stares at them, right? They like walked into the room, the dance had ended, and someone was like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. Normal.
Much more natural. The idea that people would walk into a room and just be like, pay attention to me. You get the vibe more that they're walking in and they're like, where the fuck are we supposed to go?
We've never been to one of these dances. What do we do here? I do think this dance felt less claustrophobic than the movie version, but then somehow it also felt less festive or like less exciting. Felt more formal, a little more muted.
Okay, that's fair.
Just something that was different. Mrs. Bennet's driving me nuts in this scene because she just can't be quiet at all. The whole 10,000 a year and a proud, disagreeable man. It's like, stop. They don't play her as drunk in this one as they did in the movie version, but I almost wish she was, because then if she was being this loud, I'd be like, well, she's intoxicated, and not that it's an excuse, but it would be a reason versus she's just loud and obnoxious.
Yeah, and not nice. If she were someone who was loud and slightly obnoxious, but like super kind, I can think of other characters who are silly and maybe irritating, but you don't feel the same rage.
She invokes rage. That is a good way to put it. Yeah, she makes me feel rage. I think other adaptations of her and even the book her, I feel a lot of secondhand embarrassment. I don't feel secondhand embarrassment here. I just feel angry.
I feel like we talked a lot about the dynamics between her and her children and the lack of boundaries that she has. And technically, the feeling of rage is a good indicator that the reason we're feeling upset with her is because she is breaching social and personal boundaries.
Most definitely. It does feel boundary violating, particularly in this scene, in that lack of social awareness. It's impacting not just her, but everyone else in the room. It feels very disrespectful.
Yes, I think disrespectful is a good way of describing this Mrs. Bennet.
She doesn't care that she is crossing that boundary.
Yes, and I think that sets it up in a good way of kind of Mrs. Bennet feels like or wants to be on top of her social circle where she feels, I don't want to say comfortable because she really shouldn't, but she feels like she's at the top. So what does it matter what anybody else thinks of me or what I think of anybody else? Like, I get to be the loudest voice here.
Exactly. She's just such an unlikable character in this adaptation. And I never really liked her, but I like her the least in this.
Ooh, you're in for a ride.
Does she get worse?
I mean, think about the things that happened.
This is tame Mrs. Bennet, I'm sure. Alas. We get some cute eye contact between Jane and Bingley, and they dance together, which is really nice. And actually, one of my favorite moments in this was you get this like very faint, cute little smile on Darcy when he's watching Jane and Bingley dance. And my interpretation of that is Darcy is enjoying watching his friend have a good time.
He's happy for his friend.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is sweet. I think the way that they do the Darcy Bingley, like even in this episode, shows a little bit more equality in their relationship. Yes, Bingley is maybe a bit of a people pleaser, but he values Darcy's opinion versus Darcy telling him what to do. And Darcy very clearly cares for his friend's happiness. They've done a good job of setting up those priorities in this weird friendship that these two have.
Right, because I think otherwise, even sometimes in the book, it is hard to fully understand why Darcy and Bingley are so close. But I think this adaptation does a good job setting you up for that.
Right.
I will say this episode also had lots of dancing. So that made me very happy because we love the dancing. Even though some of the dances are like a little weird. And I'm like, you know what I did right here? An excellent dance always has clapping choreographed in. Because there's like one where they're just clapping in the middle of it.
I'm fairly certain that the dances that they do are Regency dances.
Oh, I'm 100% certain about that.
We've talked about your love for the dances. And I think that this series will help highlight for you what Regency dancing actually is and how much like line dancing it actually is, and that you have to learn the moves of a dance. But I think that this will give you a better idea of what Regency dancing actually looks like, and you can decide whether or not that means you love it more or less.
I mean, I enjoyed it. I had no problems with any of the dancing in this episode. I really enjoyed it. I'm very happy there's been lots of dancing.
You approved of the clapping.
Yeah, I think clapping and dancing is sometimes humorous, which it was a little bit in this, but also a lot of fun. I'm down for the clapping and choreography, mostly because I can't dance. So like it gives me something to do with my hands.
Did this type of dance feel like something that if you spent time learning it, you could do? Maybe not well, but like,
I think I could do it.
Which is like supposed to be the point. The majority of people can engage in dance without it needing to be a super skill.
Yeah. The Bingley sisters look ridiculous in their outfits. They always, though, through this entire episode, they just look ridiculous. I don't know what they're wearing. Clearly, what I know they're wearing is London fashion and what's in vogue in London at the time. But they look so out of place this entire episode.
Mm-hmm. They stick out like sore thumbs. And it, not in ways that it's like, ooh, pretty elegant ladies. It's like, what the fuck are you wearing?
Yeah. Why are you wearing that?
Orange and green. That's a bold choice.
Their outfits could maybe make those hats work.
Well, that's the point, Teresa.
I know. But still, just weird outfits.
I mean, I really like some of the stuff that Caroline Bingley wears. I think you're correct in that it feels super out of place. But I think aesthetically, I enjoy her dresses. They're ridiculous, and that's why I love them.
Mm.
I don't think that was what she was trying to get across with the dress, but I loved the ridiculousness of it.
See, I think I like what Lizzie wears better because it doesn't stand out so much. So I understand what she's wearing more than what Carolyn wears.
Fair. I mean, I like Lizzie's stuff too. I don't want to feel like we're just holy Caroline Bingley clothing bashing because I like her clothes. It's just weirdly out of place in this context.
If it was a different character in a different context, I'd really like the outfits. It's hard that like I also don't like Carolyn. So as a character, what she wears is harder for me to like. I wrote down some quotes here and I didn't write down who said them.
Oh, I can probably tell you.
Someone described the Bingley sisters as such charming women. And I just wrote blarg.
I think that's Mrs. Bennett when they're talking about the after the dance.
Then there's just two more that I'm not entirely sure about, which is she's an angel next to she smiles too much. And I think they were talking about Jane.
That's Bingley and Darcy were talking about Jane. And this was the breakfast afterwards. And Caroline Bingley says that Jane Bingley, like, they adore her. And then I don't know if Mrs. Hurst retorts like she's an angel. And then Caroline Bingley goes, the mother. Ugh. And Darcy comes up with a flaw of like she smiles too much.
Okay. I understand now. This is how my brain works, listeners. I write notes and then I don't remember what they mean.
Woohoo! What did you think of Darcy and Bingley at the assembly? Where one of my favorite moments is Bingley walking over to Darcy and being like, Darcy, I refuse to have you stand around in such a stupid manner. And he's like really telling him to dance. And Darcy's just like, your sisters are occupied. He's like, there's hundreds of girls in this room. Someone in dance, you fool. And I just love the like jovial but forcefulness of Bingley in that. And I think it still does a really good job of keeping him puppy dog, but he's very much calling out his friend.
Oh yeah. Those are quotes from the book that feel like they fit really well in this, that they pulled good quotes. And I do think it does keep Bingley in that puppy energy. And I think it again kind of reinforces that relationship between the two of them, that Bingley is able to both respect and come to Darcy and value his opinion and also be like, you're stupid.
I love you so much and I really appreciate your advice on things, but also I think you're a dumbass.
Which I just think is so adorable. And I think that their exchange, I appreciate the she's not handsome enough to tempt me line that Darcy gives when talking about Lizzie. And then I appreciate the way that they played that off, because in the book, you know, Lizzie goes around and kind of tells everyone, like, the stupid guy said the stupid thing. And you watch her go over and tell Charlotte. You can tell that they're laughing at Darcy. And you get just this like split second moment where you're like, oh shit, Darcy knows that they're laughing at him. How awkward. And I loved it.
I like the moment where these two guys are just like openly talking about a girl who's sitting not that far from them. And Darcy says something stupid and she gets up and walks by him with a smile on her face. And he like watches her, hopefully with the understanding that he just openly rejected her to her face. And she goes over somewhere and makes fun of him. I don't know if that's the exact moment that Darcy fell in love with her, but it might be the moment where he was like, I tried to put her down and she went around the room and made everybody hate me. And I just fell in love. Colin Firth does such a good job of like subtly showing the oh shit moment on his face of like, fuck, they're talking about me. I fucked up.
See, I don't know if I think that's his I fell in love moment, but there is a moment later that I do talk about his I fell in love face when Lizzie turns him down for dancing at the Lucases. So I do think it does come on pretty quickly for him.
Oh, and I mean, it does in the book too. I mean, maybe not full love, but he moves towards attraction and wanting to dance with her pretty quick.
Well, but I think in the book, it's harder to tell that that has happened for him. You do get to the marriage proposal part in the book and you're like, what the fuck, man? Who are you? Why? What? How? Versus in this, there is just that like very so subtle moments where you're like, ooh, something's changing for him here. And it feels a little more apparent. Granted, does that feel more apparent because I know what's coming? Maybe. I don't know.
I also feel like this adaptation is a little bit more dual perspective than the book. There are moments where Austen will tell us, like at Netherfield Ball, where he and Elizabeth dance, and it says that he leaves without animosity towards Elizabeth, but towards Wickham. He's pissed. And you get the sense that he doesn't hold anything against Lizzie and that he still likes her, but you never get the sort of like, dude's in love.
Yeah.
And this, I think, does a little bit more of like giving you Darcy's perspective of things,
which I really like. There is a funny moment in here. It's the breakfast after where they're all talking. And Mr. Hurst, who got royally drunk the night before, like wakes up and like utters something stupid. And there's a look on Bingley's face. You can tell he's like, oh, fuck, we're related. And you're married to my sister.
Is that when he wakes up and he says, abominable waste of time?
Yes. And Bingley's face is just so dejected and so sad that this man is in my life.
Right.
Which is kind of fair, because even in the book, you're kind of like, who is Mr. Hurst? I don't really know.
Yeah, I think Mr. Hurst has played really well in this. It's like almost like it's a look of disgust and yeah, dejection across Bingley's face.
Makes me laugh. Then we get to Lucas Lodge and there is more dancing. Mrs. Bennet's being annoying and stupid again, and I just want her to stop talking, but we won't belabor that point too much. And we meet Colonel Forster and his wife, and I had this moment of like, oh, I feel bad for her. He's really old and she's very young. I don't feel like that point came across in the book as clearly.
Oh, it's very clear, but it's just more normalized. It's not in front of our eyes, but it's also normalized in that period of like, that's something that just happened. So you know that he's an old guy and that his wife is close in age to Lydia, but they don't dwell on it at all.
Right. The visualization of it, though, in this feels very apparent and very hard to watch. You're like, oh, I just feel so bad for her with this old creepy dude.
Right.
I do like Mr. Lucas. He seems very sweet. Even when there's the whole, Mary, play us a song. No, I don't want to. Nah, nah, nah. And they're fighting. I'm also like, do none of you have social manners? You're out in public. Stop your bickering. It's just annoying. And he's very sweet in that moment. So I really liked him.
Okay. I think there's a little bit of like the idea that the Bennets and just everybody generally is super comfortable because they run in the same circles so often that going over to the Lucases is like going over to a friend's house.
And I get that.
It's just embarrassing because there's new people around.
None of them are on company behavior.
Right? And you can tell very clearly they have never been taught that.
Exactly. Which is kind of fitting for how it is in the book of both overbearing but wildly absent parents is how I would describe the Bennets. And I think that is apparent in this also.
Right.
And then Charlotte says this like really heartbreaking line, which I think is quite foreshadowing of happiness in marriage is left to chance. It's just so sad. You're like, oh, Charlotte, you never had a chance. You had to end up with Mr. Collins because that's how you have thought about things.
Well, not just that's how you have thought about things, but that's actually how society is.
Yes.
Marriage is a legal contract, and this concept of marrying for love is not a widespread concept and is for the most part frowned upon.
Well, you don't turn down marriage proposals because you're not in love. That's just not how society works. It just makes me sad for her, mostly because I know Collins is coming.
Yeah, I want to have like witchy music. Like whenever we talk about Collins,
right? Or like a thunderclap or something of just like sadness.
A sad thunderclap. So Charlotte is sad.
Charlotte is sad. I'm sad for Charlotte. Her life is sad. I always feel that way. I will say, I feel like this Charlotte versus movie Charlotte is not as sad. Movie Charlotte felt depressing. This Charlotte might be resigned, but also still happy. Like there's still a joy to her.
I think there's a difference in feeling between movie Charlotte and this Charlotte. You get almost like this idea that movie Charlotte has given up on finding love.
Yes.
Whereas this Charlotte has always been realistic and always practical about it. It just hasn't happened.
Yes. And that she also feels like love could still happen after she gets married.
And she's not banking on it.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But not in a like, and then my life will be miserable. But in a like, well, that's just the way it is.
Transport this Charlotte into modern day, she would have done a much better job of just like being happy as a single person, someone who could be happy falling in love but doesn't need it. Whereas movie Charlotte very much was like, I need to be in a relationship. This Charlotte's not going to conflate a marriage that she ends up having with a romantic attachment.
Yes.
She understands it's very much on a practical level versus like, I'm going to try and create magic.
And then Lizzie turns down Darcy for dancing.
Oh, one of my favorite scenes ever.
Mm-hmm.
Both in the book and in this movie, where Sir Lucas is intervening to try and push these two together. And Lizzie's like, no. And Darcy's like, I wouldn't mind. And she's like, no. And Darcy's like, if you want to, I'd love to. And she's like, no.
Yep.
And Darcy's like, oh my God, she said no to me. I love her. That does a good job. We talked about this somewhere in series one about Darcy probably has had a lot of people falling all over him because he's a rich guy, but that Darcy hasn't ever had to be the one fighting for someone. He hasn't been the one who's had to pursue someone or be better for someone or even just get to know someone. He hasn't had that opportunity because everybody's falling all over him because he's a handsome rich dude.
Well, he's used to everyone being Carolyn.
Yeah.
I love the way he shoots her down in this. Of I was thinking about beautiful eyes and a beautiful face. You can tell Carolyn's like, oh, maybe he's thinking about me. Oh, I'm so excited. And she asks him and he's like, Miss Elizabeth Bennet. And you can just tell Carolyn's, oh, I'm so mad and sad. And
do you get the impression that Darcy knew what he was doing? Or do you think he was just having a conversation with Carolyn and happens to put her down?
I think he's just having a conversation and happens to put her down. And I think some of that is because of how it's filmed. that they're both looking in the same direction and she's behind him. He can't see her facial expression in that. And so he can't see the reaction that happens.
I guess I've always kind of thought about whether or not in this dynamic that there is, whether or not he's known that Caroline has feelings for him and just doesn't care, or if he's completely oblivious to it because he has no attraction to her. So it's just not on his radar at all. But all of those are like, he acts sort of obliviously around Caroline.
You feel that in this, that he is a little oblivious and that his mind is distracted. He's still thinking about Lizzie.
It's cute.
That's the scene where I think,
oh yeah, he got rejected and sarcastically rejected. It's the stuff that he loves.
It's his, oh, I want more of that. I'm going to pursue that. And Colin Firth gives a good I'm in love face.
Yeah.
That's still subtle.
He's not a panting puppy.
You can just tell there's a subtle shift and you're like, ooh, things are shifting in him. And then Jane goes over for dinner. She gets sick. But the dinner that she's having before she gets sick is so uncomfortable.
Yeah, she's obviously sick, but it's also really quiet and awkward.
Yeah, well, and they're asking about her family and like clearly prying into like, what are your social connections? But I don't actually think Jane looks particularly sick in this scene. So then when she's just like, excuse me, I'm sorry, and like, is sick, it just happens so rapidly. I'm like, this does not track for me.
And Caroline being like, oh, fetch a doctor.
Yeah, she looks fine. She just looks awkward.
Yeah, it's a weird scene. This was the most awkward dinner of my life. I'm going to pretend to be terribly sick so I can get out of this.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. It feels like she's faking being sick rather than actually being sick.
Oh, poor Jane.
And then Lizzie comes to visit. And I think that this adaptation did a really good job of the like windswept hair and mud on the dress, that it matches what I envisioned when I read that scene of her doing that walk and coming and being kind of in disarray. That is what I envisioned.
And Darcy happening upon her.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's well done. Although, and I think this might be me conflating the movie and the book and now the miniseries all together in my brain. For some reason, I don't remember her in the book finding Mr. Darcy first.
No, she doesn't. But it's also like chef's kiss of him just like stumbling upon her and having that moment of like magic before having to go back to the awkwardness of the Bingleys. He gets to have that private attraction to Elizabeth in that moment. And I think there's like this really cute, he's like, you walked here? And she's like, yes. What of it? And she like says, show me to my sister. And he's just like, you know what you like, don't you? And just like has this very subtle sort of like smile, and he's being playful. And this is where you start to get the shift in energy from Darcy to playful attraction that he doesn't realize Lizzie is not going to pick up on.
Yes, exactly. Had I not read the book before, I also probably would not have picked up on it. I do love the line, which is also a carryover from the book, of Carolyn saying, like, she looked wild, and Colin Firth responding about her eyes of not at all. They were brightened by the exercise. Oh, my heart. I loved that.
Yeah, because wild is a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, her eyes were fucking wild.
In like all the best ways.
Yeah. I want someone who's going to walk 5K to come visit their sister. And I like that. I think Bingley says that it showed great love for her sister.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is like the difference between like a Bingley character and a Darcy character. Bingley is very much looking at someone's inner workings, their emotion. He's having empathy and trying to understand them. And Darcy's like, she's hot.
She's mean to me.
Yeah. She's hot. She stands up to me. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's much a more raw attraction.
Yeah. They definitely have different attachment styles.
Yes. I would not call either of them secure.
No.
I'd say Darcy moves towards secure. I think Bingley and Jane's relationship will be a securely attached relationship for the most part, but they are both two anxiously attached people.
Yes. And I think like their love story has set them up to be anxiously attached to each other at the start. I think it will become secure, but I think at the start they were set up to be anxiously attached to each other.
Yeah.
I did put in here, and this is not a question really of the miniseries, but in general, of do we think if Jane died from this cold?
You had this question when we read things too.
Did I? I don't remember. Would the book have still happened? Would Darcy and Lizzie still have ended up together? Would the stories have still happened?
Well, according to you, that Jane dying was actually going to be the thing that brought the two of them together.
Oh, yeah, because I thought it was going to be like Little Women and Beth dying. We're going to murder off Jane.
Not that Beth gets murdered.
Just by the author.
Or Louisa May Alcott. Yeah, so that was your prediction that, yes, it still would have happened.
Okay, see, in this adaptation, I don't think it would have. I think that they never would have talked again. If Jane had died, because Lizzie would be super depressed, Darcy would be super awkward and weird, and they'd probably never see each other again. Because I also don't think Bingley would ever come back.
But all of that, her aunt and uncle still at some point probably would have taken her to Pemberley.
Maybe as part of her working through her depression, they would have been like, come take a trip with us. And they would have taken her to Pemberley.
Because that would have been several months later that maybe they would have been like, let's get you out of this funk.
So what we're saying is that alive or dead, Jane does not actually impact this story.
And actually, if we're going off that logic of like cheering up, they take Jane to cheer up Jane. So in all likelihood, Lizzie would have been in London and this would have been a completely different story. Okay. So you can't fight love, Teresa.
True love finds a way.
Yeah. I answered the question.
And then we get the sitting room scenes.
Oh, yes.
It sounds like you have some feelings about these scenes, Kate.
No, I mean, I definitely appreciate the rhythm of these scenes a lot better than the movie. They feel less rushed and like they're trying to cramp everything in. And I like that it shows kind of like the social dynamic of this little tiny circle. But also, it doesn't make me like the social dynamic of this little tiny circle.
But we're not really meant to.
I mean, I want to like Bingley and Darcy.
Carolyn and Mrs. Hurst there. So it already has thrown everything off. And Mr. Hurst.
I actually appreciate it. I think it's in the first one. They're playing cards. And the conversation's getting weird. Caroline's doing some like bad nagging and flirting and ugh. And Darcy and Elizabeth are not quite heating up the tension. But Darcy's starting to notice that she's not taking his compliments because they're so subtly and stupidly given. And in this, it doesn't seem like she's being combative to just be combative.
Mm-hmm.
It feels much more like she is calling them out. But just as that starts to get annoying and you're like, ugh, I want this conversation to end, Mr. Hurst is like, are we playing cards or not? I was like, thank you, Mr. Hurst.
The one moment he had some social awareness.
I don't know if he had social awareness or he just wanted to play cards. I was there for him for that moment.
I do think there is a like cute moment where Lizzie's kind of dishing it back and Darcy stops his writing and just stares at her. And that is very well played and very cute.
Well, because he does it with like the half smile. He does it with the half smile of like, I just got told off. I'm going to give you my full attention now.
You can tell that he is intrigued by her. And then Mrs. Bennet and the other sisters come. Mrs. Bennet is very dramatic of like, she's too ill to be moved. I just eye rolled at that.
Well, and also she doesn't understand that there's no point in putting on a show. Bingley is nice. He's not kicking her out of the house.
No, and it also probably would be better if they left.
Yes.
And you get that feeling from Lizzie.
I mean, but that's also, again, straight out of the book and such an awkward conversation.
And it's just like awkwardness to its max.
Lizzie does her best to manage that scenario.
Yeah. Well, and it does make me, I guess, think about if Jane had been there, that the two of them have managed these scenarios many times. So I wonder if that would be different for the two of them to be able to manage it together versus Lizzie having to manage it. And then we inexplicably get Darcy in a bathtub.
Yes. And then she's outside playing with the dog.
Yes, but Darcy in a bathtub just feels like a thirst trap.
I mean, yeah, why not?
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it feels like a thirst trap. But then they like wet his hair and his mutton chops. Oh my God, those mutton chops. As soon as his hair is wet and kind of slicked back, I can't with the mutton chops. They're so bad. I just want to take razors to them and shave them off. And I know it's the style and I know it's in vogue in that time. I get it. But no, they're so bad. And I don't know why when his hair is not wet and it's like full and curly, I don't notice them as much.
It adds to like the volume of the head versus just like the side of his face. I think it's really interesting that the things that you've picked up on and that have really annoyed you are things like hats, weird dresses, mutton chops. Whereas like I think about that scene and I think about him going to the window and looking at Lizzie play with the dog, and it's like, oh, there's like deepening affection here because he's seeing a different side of her and she's being playful and he likes dogs. Oh my God, we all love dogs. And you're like, mutton chops.
I also thought all of those things. The mutton chops just took a split second for me to get over. I do have notes in here. I'm really happy Lizzie goes and plays with that giant puppy. Whose dog is this? Where did it come from?
Bingley's. There are tons of dogs. Yeah. There are tons of dogs in Jane Austen's world, all over the place. They're just not talked about.
Which is great and fine. I'm happy it's Bingley's dog and not just a random dog she found and was like, let's play fetch. I wrote, aw, Darcy falling in love while watching her with a dog. I was like, that's my dream. They're both dog lovers, and that seems really sweet and cute, and I love it. So I noticed those things too. It wasn't just the mutton chops. The mutton chops just angered me.
I guess like the mutton chops, it's not something that I fixated on at all. And the hats, like I saw the hats before, but I never really saw the hats. And now I have, and I won't unsee that ever again.
You're welcome. You might hate me after this.
I thought I was bringing you in to love Jane Austen with me. In fact, you're going to ruin it.
You never know. You're welcome.
Yay!
And then Jane and Lizzie are leaving, and there's some flirty flirt between Jane and Bingley, which is very cute, very sweet. We kind of end with this like sweet freeze frame of Lizzie and Jane. I don't know. Do you have other thoughts on this episode?
Have favorite moments from this episode, but it's not my favorite in the mini series. I feel like it only gets better from here. And I think it's really funny, and I'm biting my tongue around some of the things that you have said. When you talk about dialing things up to 10, there are a few things that you said where I'm like, oh, Trace is in for a surprise. You thought that was bad. So I'm excited for you to continue watching this one because I think it'll be good, silly fun.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I liked this episode. I think I liked the pacing of it better than I liked the pacing of the movie because this one episode is about an hour. So it does feel like you get in a little bit more detail and you get to be with the characters and develop with the characters a little bit more in this format.
So yeah, the movie's 2 hours and 15 minutes, and this is a 6 hour miniseries.
You just get more.
And the pacing can be slower. You don't feel like everything's being thrown at you. Well, we'll see, because you watched the movie before you watched the miniseries. So you're going to be able to have a different perspective about whether or not watching one before the other shifts what you like, because they're just different.
I don't feel like this is the start of a zombie apocalypse movie, though.
Okay.
So far. You never know, but so far.
We will definitely have to watch Pride and Prejudice and Zombies so that your fantasy can come true.
I don't know if it's a fantasy necessarily. Fantasy seems good. I don't know if I want there to be zombies. Just feels like it'd be geared well towards zombies. So we will see.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to be reading more of Northanger. We are doing chapters 6 to 8 next. Yeah, and we're just going to kind of intersperse these extra episodes every so often, and hopefully you'll love us and everything that we do. Thanks for listening. We think you're awesome. We're glad you think we're awesome. We find it weird that you like us, but we're glad you're here. Yeah. Any other thoughts, Teresa?
I guess follow us on Instagram at Austin Therapy Podcast and Kate's meme account at Austin Therapy. I think most of our listeners probably already do, but if you don't, come join us over there. It's fun, I guess. I don't know. We post some fun clips that sometimes have things that don't make it into the episode. So you can listen for extra little tidbits in there.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Bye.